counseling Timothy on how to behave in the house of the Lord. And he has just about thrashed everybody in the church so far, including the pastors, the wives, the women, the children. And let's start with this first word, dia para tribe. Diphtharmenon. Anthropon, ton, nun, kai, apesteremenon. Tais, alethias, nobizonton. Porismon, ene, tain, eusebion. My text is so written up here I can hardly read it. This word here is dia para tribe. That's a tri-compound word. It means through, beside, and the last part of it means to wrangle, to fight, to argue, to cause great tribulation, or to be tribulated. We got our word tribulation right out of that word. Constant wranglings, corrupted in mind, corrupted in, it means to rub the wrong way. Has anybody ever rubbed you the wrong way? How many of you got rubbed the wrong way today? That's what this word means. To rub the wrong way. To just pester. All right? Constant wranglings. And then the next word is dia, and dia phtharmenon. And this means having been thoroughly corrupted. Just like taking a glass of water or grape juice and having a vial of arsenic and mercury and strychnine and just not doing too much, but just take a little drop out of each one of those and put it in that grape juice. Now, that grape juice was real good to begin with. But now after you put a drop of strychnine and a drop of mercury and a drop of arsenic in it, what do you have? It's thoroughly corrupted. Do not drink it. You drink it and you're going to have lots of problems pretty soon. That's what this means. Having been thoroughly contaminated, corrupted. Men are rubbing each other the wrong way. Their minds are totally corrupted. And look here, the mind, tone, noon there. Remember what we had, five words for mind in Greek, didn't we? Five words for mind. Let's look at that one just quickly. If I can find it in this old worn-out Bible, it's kind of worn out, as you can see. I've been using that thing. The pages are just about worn out. Nous, the faculties of perception and understanding. I need a magnifying glass. Feeling, judging, determining spiritually. Ephesians 4 and 17, Philippians 4 and 7, Colossians 2, 18, 1 Timothy 6 and verse 5. Right here, okay? So their minds are completely contaminated with wranglings, and they're poisoned. Their minds have been poisoned. Now, the word nome, it's like G-N-O-M-E, nome. It's gamma, nu, omega. I'm trying to stay in Greek instead of Hebrew. Mu. And then Ada. Almost said ma'am. It's not ma'am, it's moo. This word means the ability to discern, the capacity of judgment as far as conduct is determined. This is what we call horse sense. The other one there is discernment. This other word, discernment, the faculty of perception there. Now we have another word, boule. Boule, like B-O-U-L-E, It's beta, omicron, epsilon, lambda, that is, not lamet, and eta. The mental will, plan, volition. Okay? Now, Paul uses these words interchangeably, but right now he's using the word nous. And then we come to the word phrein. Phrein, it means the diaphragm, the midriff, the intellect, carnal intellect. And this one here, you can put his horse sense also. And then Sophia. Sophia. That's a beautiful name, isn't it, Sophia? Sophia is one of the most beautiful Greek words for mind there is, and it means the ability to turn everything around and make it look rosy, spiritually. Thelematos, Ephesians 1 and 1. Spiritual activating force. It's like thelos, thela. That's like boule. That's related to boule. Thelematos, spiritual activating force. So this word here from mind, noon, it means the spiritual perception of these people is totally corrupted and poisoned. Having been vacant, a vacant sign right in front. I preached at a funeral one time, and I was preaching David's father's funeral. Remember Emil Ash that used to be in my class? He was an elderly gentleman. But he came into class, and he's extremely polite and a tremendous genius student. You could get him to talk if you drug it out of him, but otherwise he would not. He's a very careful man in every way. And when I was doing his funeral out there at Green Lawn, I said, you know, you have students. I said, I've been teaching people since the late 60s, early 70s. And I said, when you get a student come to your class, you can tell whether they're a box of rocks or they have a mind, one or the other, because the wheels are turning. The wheels are turning. And I said, he was no box of rocks. The wheels were turning all the time, and he was up until he died. He had a good mind. These people don't have that. They don't care what anybody else knows or anything else. It's their world is right and stops at the end of their nose. That's all. And everything is selfish. Everything is self-centered. Men, the mind having been vacated, vacant, empty, a box of rocks, having been deprived, having been completely vacant, erased. Anything spiritual in their mind is erased. And the truth, erased of the truth. Everything that's truth doesn't matter to them. It's just what I feel. I believe in the total inspiration of the Bible. And the Bible tells us what's right and what's wrong. I believe that. It doesn't matter whether I did or not, but that's what I believe, because it's right, regardless. There used to be a bumper sticker about 40 years ago on the back of the car. God said it, I believe it, and that settles it. It doesn't need that, I believe it. God said it, that settles it. That's the way it is. But have you ever talked to somebody and you were talking about biblical doctrines or things, and they asked you a question, or you were in a group of people, and they said, well, that's not the way I feel. That's not what I feel. You know what I'm talking about. That's not what I feel. What you feel is usually right out of hell. Those are Adamic. That's your Adamic nature. These people were running on Adamic nature only. That's all. And then we have this. These are preachers he's talking about here, by the way. You know, the cream of the crop, supposedly. Supposing, no misonton, supposing, porismon, preaching for money, preaching for glory, preaching for gain. That's what it's all about, preaching for gain. As we are going to find out later on, Paul's going to tell Timothy, the preachers ought to be paid, the deacons ought to be paid, the teachers ought to be paid. If you really want to get down to the Bible, really the way it is, it's not just the preacher at the top. It comes down the line. These churches were totally supportive of themselves. It was I know the world doesn't like it, but it was like a communist socialist community. That's what all the early churches were, because they had to be. They could not live in the world because they had to be separate from the world because they were being persecuted tremendously. And so the pastors and the teachers and the deacons were servants of that church. Now, you know, in church history, as they were elevating in the what we call the Protestant Reformation, of course, the Catholic Church, you know, if you go to Cal State or you go up here to Bakersfield College or any place and you take church history, they're going to talk about the history of the Catholic Church, which is not church history. That's the history of the Catholic Church. There were a lot of Christians out there all the time, and Catholicism was persecuting tremendously. I told you here a while back, I bring that thing, I think it was in 1658, when I've got Samuel Moreland's The Ecclesiastical History of the Churches of the Valley of the Piedmont, where the Catholic Church went in and killed all of those early Christians. They were the ones that became the Mennonites and the Amish and everything. Those are Anabaptists or Baptists. This is where the name Anabaptist, the Wiedertaufers, is where, and that's German for dippers. They dipped. Everybody that came to them, they dipped them. Menno Simons was a Catholic priest, and he was one of the honest ones. He left the Catholic Church and didn't try to reform it. John Calvin and Martin Luther left the Catholic Church, but they wanted to reform it. They didn't want to leave the Catholic Church. They wanted to reform it. Both of them are Catholic priests. John Calvin was never ordained as a priest, but he was a priest in the Dominican churches. He was a priest. And he was always fighting with the hierarchy there, but he was very aggressive. He was a lawyer. Matter of fact, both of them were lawyers. Martin Luther was ordained, and he was a Catholic priest, but he wanted to reform the Catholic Church. Menno Simons saw that there wasn't any use to reform something. I mean, how are you going to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear? It wasn't going to work. So he went out and became an Anabaptist. He got baptized by the Anabaptists, and we still have the Mennonites today, even though they don't believe exactly what he does or did back then. The pastors lived off of the church because that's the way it was. They didn't go out and make a living. Apostle Paul, you know, he was an apostle and a missionary. He went out and he got in one area there where he could go to his tent-making trade. And he could do that for a while because the churches weren't supporting him. And then he apologized to the churches for not allowing them to support him, not demanding them to support him, because that's what they should have done. But now, this word's only used one time in the New Testament, this word, porismon. They're preaching to find a way for profit and fame. Profit and fame. And prestige. Religion is a good way to make money. To be, okay, supposing that truth gained be godliness, profit. Godliness, it will profit us, won't it? Godliness does profit you. Godliness does profit you. You know, my father, that was my birth father, was killed when I was 2 years old, robbing a liquor store in Long Beach, California. And he had been in Europe in the war, and he came back with post-traumatic stress disorder terribly. He lived on adrenaline, and that's what it was, just like Audie Murphy did. My father just robbed places, stole cars, did all the things that when he came back, he was just all messed up. Well, he finally got killed. He hadn't been back. He got killed in 1949. Then my mother married Dale Otto Remling. And if you look up on the website, Dale Otto Remling, you'll find out he's a world-class scoundrel, is what it says. He was something else, but I learned so much from him. That was the one that raised me. But boy, was he in trouble. All the time, running from the law. Buck Owens was his nephew, you know. And I think I told you about him going to the bars. He dragged me in the bars, and Buck would see Dale, and he'd get him over there, and he said, "Dale, are you running from the law, or is everything okay?" You know, and all right. He said, "Well, I want you to hear my uncle sing." And everybody would go boo, you know. They didn't want to hear uncle. They wanted to see hear Buck Owens sing. He said, "No, you really like it." So he'd get up there and sing, and he'd bring the house down. He was so talented, tremendously talented. He just could talk people out of anything, cars, houses, money, and he did. Always had some scheme going. But I will have to say this. He would have made one of the greatest preachers of all time. But he was too honest to do that. And he was too honest to be a politician. Those two things, he drew the line. And he would have been great at both of them. And if you've seen him, you saw that video of, some of you saw the video, I mean, when they arrested him for breaking out of that prison in Jackson, Michigan in 1975, I think it was. He commandeered that thing. He was on national live news. He got what he wanted. He'd been put in prison on false charges, but he did break out of he hijacked a helicopter. That could have got him killed right there. Death penalty. But he got his attention. But he did not use religion as a prophet. He could have. He said that he could have. He said, "I could have done that, but I don't believe in God." Finally, before he died, he told me he believed, which I'm really glad. I preached his funeral. 6:6. Esten de parismos megas he Eusebia meta ato atarkeos. But it is gain great the piety. What does Eusebius mean? Remember that one, Sharon? Eusebius. Roger. Eusebius. We have a very famous historian and early church father named Eusebius. Remember what his name means?
Piety.
What?
Piety.
Yeah, but it means more than that. What does it actually mean? You on the front of it means good. What does it mean? To handle yourself carefully. To handle yourself carefully. To be careful. When I think of this word, I always think of Emalash. To handle yourself carefully. With self-sufficiency. That word there, self-sufficiency. Auto means self. Autopsy means what? What does autopsy mean? Luke was fond of that word, autopsy. Autopsy. What does autopsy mean? Autopsy, that's a Greek word.
Checking out
a
physical body.
It means to see for your own self. An autopsy is when you take a person's body apart and look at it and find out what happened to him with your own eyes. I mean, it's a gruesome thing, but that's what it means. Autopsy means to look at it for yourself. So here we have the word aterkios, self-sufficiency. In other words, taking care of yourself. Taking care of yourself. 6:7. Udain, gar, ace en neg gamen. Ace, ton, cosmon. Hote, ude, ex en neg kane. T, dinametha. Here we have one of the most quoted verses in the Bible. Usually they do this at funerals, don't they? For nothing we have brought into the cosmos. What did you bring into this world? Now, I'm going to ask you two or three questions about this. What part did you have of bringing yourself into the world? Did you do anything to get here? Just exactly what did you do to get here? You were just flopped out here, weren't you? That's it. Didn't have anything to do. It was mom and daddy's fault, wasn't it? Mom and dad's fault, yeah. We brought nothing into this world. What did you bring with you when you were born? A naked little baby with nothing and couldn't even take care of yourself, could you? Yeah. Kicking and screaming. Well, they usually beat you up right off the bat, slap you on the bottom, make you cry. I think those doctors just like to hurt you a little bit, you know. Wham. Get you to breathe, you know. Maybe they could have done some other reason. Whap. You know, they used to whap the babies. First thing a baby got in this world was whooping. First thing. Now they tell us don't whoop them. The first thing they got was a whooping. Now they tell us don't whoop them. We brought nothing. Uthane. That is it's really a tri-compound word. It comes from uk, day, and hina. Moreover, not one thing we brought into this world. You didn't bring anything in the world but an appetite. That's all you got. You were hungry when you were born, supposedly. Get beat up and then want to eat. Because neither to carry out anything we are able. Now after you, when you're brought into this world, you didn't have anything to do with it. When you die, what do you leave behind? What do you leave behind? If you're if you got $50 million, what do you leave behind? $50 million. That's all. What do they take out of the world? Nothing. Some people will say, like the pharaohs did a long time ago, put all my riches in my coffin. And then what happens? They'll rob the coffin and throw your bones out on the ground. That's what happened. They can't even find some of the pharaohs that they robbed the tomb. They just scattered their bones all over the place. You know, Abraham Lincoln was buried, I think, 5 times. There was an Irish gang out of New York that had made a plan that they were going to go there and they were going to steal his body and ransom it to the United States government. And they went in there and almost did it. They almost did. He was mistreated terribly after he died. His body was anyway. His bones. I think that they embalmed him 3 times to get him where he would withstand all the travel and everybody all across the United States looking at him, you know, as they viewed him. The last time he was buried, they opened his coffin to make sure he was still there, and there he was. He was in a lead-lined coffin, and there he was. He was still there with his little goatee and mole on his face and everything. It was him. So they buried him, and I think they put 50 yards of cement on top of his grave so they couldn't move him. When you die, there's nothing in the world you can do to protect yourself. Whatever you're going to do to protect yourself, you better do it before. How many of you ever heard of Buffalo Bill Cody? William F. Cody. He died over there in Colorado, and you know what they did to him? They took his body. Now, he had a ranch in Cody, Wyoming, and one in North Platte, Nebraska. The one in Nebraska, it was called Scout's Rest. And I've been there, and his home was there. And then out there on the barn, all of the rafters had the cutout of a Winchester 73 butt, you know, that half-moon-looking butt place. All the rafters were cut like that. He wanted to be buried there. But he also had that ranch up there where he went and entertained people where they hunted in Cody, Wyoming. I have a pistol up there right now, Audie Murphy's pistol, that's on display there at Cody, Wyoming, the William F. Cody Museum there, Arms Museum. Anyway, he was over there in Colorado when he died. So they took him out there, dug a hole deep in the ground, and then poured yards and tons and tons and tons of cement on top of him so they couldn't dig him up. They wanted him there because he was famous. When you're dead, he was a very powerful man in life. Well, he was. He was one of the legends that really was a legend. He was really a legend. He could ride horses. He could shoot just like it says in the books. He was really a Pony Express rider. He really was a Indian scout. He did all kinds of stuff that all the little stories, the dime novels and everything said about him, some of them were embellished quite a little, but he did all those things. He really did that. And everybody wanted to be next to him because he was so famous. It's fame, you know. But when he's dead, they stole his body. He didn't get to be buried where he wanted to be buried. Done over with. You bring nothing in the world, and you can carry nothing out of it. 6 and verse 8, ekontes, de dia trophos, kai, skepas maton, mata, tutois, arkes de somatha. It starts out with a weak adversative conjunctive particle de. It is the second word, but that's the way it starts. Greek isn't like English. It puts the most important word first, and that word is having. Now, but having sustenance, nourishment, diatrophos. That word's used one time in the New Testament also. This is the only place it's used. Nourishment, food. What's very important? How many of you have ever been hungry? Really hungry? Over in Vietnam, the time you didn't have any food out there in the jungle and all of that. You know what I've got? I'm a sucker. Animals know that I'm going to feed them, and they come out there at that ranch, and they come wandering in. They have chickens wander in. Dogs wander in. Cats wander in. And here they are, and they see me, and they said, I know you're going to feed me. I know what it's like to be hungry. I was raised in extremely poor circumstances. People don't even understand that type of poverty. I lived in a shack that was built out of boards that floated down the canal bank. My grandfather stuck them together, had a makeshift tin roof on it, and no boards long enough to do anything. We didn't even have any boards big enough to build the door, so we had a tarp flap, and the floor was dirt. My grandmother would get a bucket of water and throw on the floor and sweep out the dust off of it and make it like almost like tile in there, you know. In the winter, in the summertime, she would get in there and throw water all over everything to cool it off just a little bit because it was so hot, 120 degrees, 110 degrees at nighttime in a tin shed type thing like that. It was really rough. And I mean to tell you what, I knew what it was like to be hungry. We moved up to Fish Lake Valley when I was about 8 years old, and my mother had never been away from home, and she did not know how to cook. And here we were growing up there, and we are 100 miles from town. And in Fish Lake Valley, that's up northeast of Bishop out there in the middle of the high desert, right down below White Mountain Peak, 14,264 feet, and all that cold air falls down there, and the Silver Peak Range on that side, and 12,000 feet, and all the cold air falls down there. And you're out there in the 50s, 1950s, and you can't drive a car 80, 90 miles real just like that. You don't make these day trips that we do today. It was an expedition. Got up there, and my mother had not prepared for winter. We ran out of food. Out of food. The chickens quit laying. We didn't want to kill the chickens because they represented eggs later. I was killing I hunted every day. Went out and hunted rabbits. The rabbits were so cold, the rabbits hibernated. There were no birds anyplace to shoot. I would shoot chuckers, and I'd go up and shoot fish in the streams. I didn't know how to fish, but I'd shoot them. I could catch them that way. Doves, whatever. You know, this was food. This was not recreation. This was food. We ran out of food. The milk, the cow quit giving milk. And a doctor had left several cases of oyster stew there. And that's all we had. I wasn't hungry enough to eat that oyster stew. I'm just telling you that right now. I was starving. My stomach was gnawing on itself. It was swelling up with gas pains and stuff because I was hungry, but I couldn't eat that stuff. My stepfather would put that down in front of me and said, eat it. And I'd eat it and go throw it up. Eat it and throw it up. I just could not. I couldn't keep it down. Oysters don't agree with me. I don't think I was allergic to them, but I just didn't want them. You know, I couldn't stomach it. I wasn't that hungry, but I was starving. Go to school and watch the other kids eat their lunch. Man, I'm hungry. And they sat there. I know what it is to be hungry. And it's real good when you got something to eat. Real good. Real good. I remember one time when I was roughnecking in the oil fields, and I was out of a job. the weld, all the rigs were down and everything else. The Cannon Oil Well Service was a fly-by-night outfit. And one of the people that worked for them asked me if I wanted, I was working in the service station, and he came in there and he said, "You want to go to work? We got a rig out there at Devil's Den, you know. You don't need a car or anything. You don't need food. You don't need anything, you know. Just go there and you'll stay there for 2 weeks. We got a place for you to stay and everything there, and go out there." And so I wanted to drive my car out there. He wouldn't let me, because I was being shanghaied. That's Shanghai. I was shanghaied. And so they took me out there and dumped me off. I take a lot of food with me. When I got out of high school, I was 6'2" and I weighed 139 pounds. I was starving. The first year that I worked in oil fields, I weighed 240. I had gained weight. I'd filled out. And I wanted to eat, so I took this 2 lunch pails full of food with me out there. And he said, "Right over there's a rig," and he dumped me off over here at this little shack of a trailer. He said, "Go down there and take these orders to the guys." I said, "Aren't you going to go?" "Oh, no. I'll see you later. Back in a couple of weeks. We'll bring you more orders." We starved. We had cornflakes and powdered milk and no water. The water was terrible. We had to try to boil it, build a fire and boil the water where it wouldn't kill you. It was green coming out of these old tanks out there in Devil's Den. This is terrible. It tastes like sulfur anyway. In 2 weeks, we were hungry. I was hungry. They looked at my food when I brought my food out that night. Those people, food, you know, I mean, so that we ate it all up. I couldn't tell them not to eat. I was a real good mechanic, and they had a Corvair out there, and I looked at that Corvair, and I said, "I think I can get that Corvair running." We got and stole the battery. We stole some gas. I got that Corvair running. We drove it down to Avenale. We put gasoline in it. I had some money in my pocket, but no food. We drove that thing over there at Cannon Oil Well Services. We said, "I don't know whose car that is, but get it back to him, give him my check." And he said, "No, you quit, and you walked off, and you stole that man's car." I said, "We're not staying out there anymore." It made us wait for 2 weeks for our paycheck after being shanghaied. I ate when I got home. I was hungry. Having sustenance. That 2,000 calories a day you're supposed to get, you know. And clothing. How important is clothing? Even in heat, there's clothing is important, isn't it? And in the winter, clothing is very important. Skepasmata. Coverings. Wrappers. If you look in the Hebrew and in the Greek, pretty much clothing is wrappers. We have clothing that fits us today with buttons and all that kind of stuff. They didn't really have that back then. You just drape things over you, like a serape or whatever. Or like the Indians used to wear a breechcloth and a blanket. Sometimes they cut a hole in the middle of the blanket and stick their head through it. It works. Wrappers. With these things, we shall be satisfied. The bare necessities. Our worldly needs are really food and clothing and a shelter over our heads. And in all reality, the shelter over our heads sometimes are overly embellished. You could be surprised how you can live if you have to. I used to chase raccoons and bobcats and lions and bear all over those mountains up there. And I could go out there in the middle of the night and crawl underneath the sagebrush and go to sleep if I was tired. It would keep the snow off of me and the rain off of me to some extent. Just crawl in there in one of those deer beds. Hoi de Boulomanoi, Plutain, Amphipteuson, Ace Perosmon, Kai Pagida, Kai Epithemos, Polos Anoitos, Kai Blaperos, Heitenes, Bithizusen, Tus Antropus, Eis, alithron, kai, apolion. The desire to become rich has ruined many preachers. The desire to become famous has ruined many preachers. And the desire to become famous and rich has ruined many people's lives. Because when you have that desire, it means that's what you're going to worship. Everybody has a God, don't they? Whether they go to church or not, they have a God. Some people's God is their house. Some people's God is their dogs and cats. Some people's God is their car. These are all gods. Some people's God is their guns or whatever. You know, you see this. But the ones wishing. Now look at that word wishing there. Boule, boulomenoi. That comes from boule, doesn't it? What does boule mean? You remember what that means? Spiritual activating force. That which makes you tick. But the spiritual activating force, the wishing, the wanting, the desiring. That's nominative plural masculine present participle middle voice. What does that middle voice tell you? It's coming from your volition inside, isn't it? To be rich. This is on your mind all the time. How many of you ever seen rich people that wore rags? Money, the dollar bill was their desire. Really. I've known people, one couple, they were brother and sister. I knew these people for many, many years. They were tighter than the bark on a tree. They looked over the glasses, keep them wearing them out. You know these old things, old sayings? They would not buy clothes. They'd get clothes from Goodwill or out of these. They'd get in these things where you throw clothes away and get them, steal them out of there and put them on. And they weren't going to spend a dime to wash them either. They just wear them until they fell apart. Now these are rich people. Millionaires. I went by his house the other day. It's all burned down. All the property's gone. It's all leveled out. Everything he had. Millionaire. My wife and I walked into a restaurant one time, and there him and his sister were sitting up there at the counter. They had a counter, and they had tables. They sat at the counter because they weren't going to leave a tip. No way. This guy used to go with my mother, and they went to shows together, different things. They were competing. He would never leave a tip. Never. If he could, he'd get you to pay his dinner every time. And he had gobs of money. We went over and sat down. My wife and I looked over there and said, "You see those people there?" "Yeah." She said, "They're street people." I said, "No, they're not street people. Those are millionaires." You would think that they came right off of 19th Street down in some Union Avenue in some gutter or something. Their greatest desire was to gather and gather and gather and gather and hoard money. That was it. And you know what? When they died, they left no, nothing. The state got it all. So who did they hoard all that money for? State of California. Gone. Up and flown. I don't know whether they even got buried. I don't know whether they even stuck them in a grave. Wishing to be rich. To fall in. M. Pip Tucson. They fall in. Third person plural, present indicative, active. They fall in into temptation. What kind of temptations are there, according to the Bible? What are they? Sharon, you may want them?
Temptation? Oh, all sorts of temptation. Well, pride.
Pride, yeah. Greed. What are the commandments? Thou shall not what?
Covet.
Now, tell me what that says in Hebrew. Thou shalt not keep on coveting, because what are we? Covet. By Adamic nature, we're coveters, aren't we? We're coveters. All right? Thou shalt not keep on killing. Now, why would you want to kill somebody? Why are most of the murders committed? To get what they have. People are killed not in rage most of the time. Why are they killed? Because they're being robbed. Thou shalt not steal. It says, thou shalt not keep on stealing, because we're thieves by nature. Temptations. Now you get all these people up there, like Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, Carnegie. These men ruled America. They bought America. They bought it. And they had a right to it. They said, we made America. It's ours. They bought the election in 1896, bought the election in 1900. Literally. Because they put people in there that let them stay in power. But they made a mistake. They put Teddy Roosevelt as vice president of McKinley. McKinley had they had in their pocket. But when he got killed, they one of them told the other one, said, do you realize that you put that cowboy, they put him in there. You put that cowboy in there and there's only one heartbeat between him and the presidency? Guess what he did to him? That's when we had the Antitrust Act and all that stuff. Trying to take America back. When Carnegie had a bad conscience because he killed a lot of people. You know, all these people killed people. Did you know that? They murdered people with their businesses. They murdered them. Thousands of people. Carnegie got a bad conscience, and he sold all of his steel mills and everything out and started making. He went to his pastor. He was a Presbyterian. He went to his pastor, and he said, what can I do? I have robbed America. I have pilfered our country. What can I do to make amends for what I've done? Well, he says, you know what? Education is power. Why don't you go and put free libraries in cities and start schools? So he did that. That's where we had the Carnegie Libraries and all that kind of stuff. And then Rockefeller was a Baptist. Oh, I don't know how in the world he's a Baptist and did what he did. But he did. Carnegie shamed him so much that now we have the Rockefeller Foundation. He tried to give away more money than he did. What are they going to do with all that power and all that money? Temptation of money. Jesus said what about rich men? What did he say about rich men? What did he say? It was a hyperbole. First of all, what's a hyperbole? You know what a hyperbole is? What's a hyperbole, Brother David? Roger.
Exaggeration.
An exaggeration. It's an exaggeration. Hyperbole, it means to throw over. Making such an outrageous statement that it can't be true. He said, it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a sewing needle than a rich man to get into heaven. Why? This is the reason why. Because a rich man had to sell his soul to get there. All of the law in the Old Testament was to keep the rich down. That's when they had to turn the slaves loose. And if they took a man's property, they had to give it back. These were rich to keep the rich in line, is what it was. Rich people have a hard time getting to heaven. It's really, wealth is a, I don't know, I don't have that problem, see. But wealth can be a real hindrance. There are really good rich people too. There are some. I mean, we've had some in our church that have really given a lot, done things, helped people. They help people. It can be a temptation. Look at that word ace there. To fall in, to trip into temptation. And a snare. Sometimes riches are a temptation and they are a pakida. Do you remember what that word pakida means there, David? That's my oldest Greek student right there, by the way. He's been in here longer than anybody.
I'm going to pass on that.
You're going to pass on this one. This is a two things. How many of you watched the movie Hidalgo? All right. You remember when that horse fell in that pit? That's a pit. That's a pagida. Remember over in Vietnam where they had these bamboo snares over there where they shot these bamboos through you or you fall in these pits with sharpened bamboos to stay? That's this. It's also a snare. They're always in Africa these indigenous people over there, or they're poor, and they go out and they snare these wild animals and sell their body parts. They snare elephants, they snare tigers, they snare all of these things, and it catches on their foot or something. It's a wire, like a piano wire, and they can't get it off, and they try to chew it off. And I saw a picture of a lion with three legs here a while back. He had chewed his leg off to get out of that snare. That's this snare right here, okay? The snare, the riches can be a snare. You can fall into a pit. You can be impaled to death with riches. Now, you can use riches to glorify God with, but we're talking about the negative side of it here. And lust many. Epithemios. What does that mean, epi mean? You know what epi means? Page 153 and 54 in that little book right there. That means upon. It's like ale. Aleph and, not Aleph, but Ayin and Lamet in Hebrew. Same thing. And then Themios. We got a word thermos from that Themios. What does thermos do? It keeps the heat in. It means to hold the heat in. To continually, absolutely keep your mind on this. Just to focus on it. To be obsessed with it. An obsession. That word obsession right there. It means obsession. Obsession. An obsession. Obsessions many. Foolish. That word foolish there, that means brainless. Brainless. Brainless obsessions. And injurious. Blah bedros, that means to hurt, to snare. That means to, with the snare also. It means to puncture. It means to injure a person, to slow them down. Injured. I'm always injuring myself out there on the farm. Sometimes I have things that try to injure me also. I had a spider just crawl up my sleeve and bite me all the way up my sleeve the other day. Just leave fang marks all over. Injurious. Constantly injuring. Riches can injure you. Temptations can injure you. Lusts can injure you. Quiches. Here we have a relative pronoun there, that little hatenes, but it's plural. Quiches. They cause to sink to the bottom. They cause to sink to the bottom. Riches, lusts. And then take the best of us and put us right down to the bottom of the ocean. To the bottom of the ocean. There is a little saying Jesus said. It's better that somebody tied a millstone around your neck and threw you in the bottom of the sea than to hurt one of these little ones. Take a rope, tie it around your neck, and put the other one on a millstone. That's the stones that they put in the bottom of ships for ballast, you know, that holds the ship straight. And jump off in the deepest part of the sea and just go right down there. It's better if you kill yourself than to hurt one of these little ones, to hurt a little child, or one of these young children of God. Remember, little children are born beat up and hungry. When you're born again, you're born hungry, aren't you? When you're saved, you're born hungry. Weren't you saved? When you were saved, David, you were born hungry. You wanted to learn God's Word. I remember you talking about coming into the classes. The Bible looked like a great big rock of Gibraltar, and then he started chiseling around on it little by little with God's Word. The cause to sink to the bottom, the man. Unto ruin, olethron. Olethron. Unto ruin. And destruction. That word destruction there means to tear apart. To tear apart. Utter ruin and destruction. 2 Thessalonians 2 and 3. Paul uses that in that one also. Don't trust in riches. to drown in the lust of this world. You go down to the bottom of the sea with the lust of this world. 6 and verse 10. We're almost finished with this book, you know. We're getting close to the end. Rezah. Gar. Ponton, Ton, Kakon. Heston, Hay, Philar, Giria. Hayes, Tinus. Oreg, Gomenoi. Apiplon, Ne, Thason. Apo, Tes, Pistios. Kai, Hiotos. Peri, Eperon. Udines, Pales. Reza. What is the Hebrew for that word, Sharon? Reza. Reza. The famous town in Israel.
Nazareth.
What is it?
Nazareth.
Nazareth. Root. All right, Nazar. Nazareth. Nazar means root. For the root of all the things evil. Kakos. The root of all things evil. Pamela, you got this one down there? This is a very important verse now. Put this one in red. Okay. The root of all things evil. This word kakon, what does that mean, Sharon? Do you remember what this word kakon? There's phonerion and here's kakon. What does kakon mean, Brother Roger? David, you remember that one?
It's like a dirty evil or...
It means an Adamic nature, Adamic evil. That thing which makes humankind, the Adamic man, tick. The root of all things Adamic. All things that have gone astray. It is the Philargyria. Philargyria. What is that one? What's that philos comes on the front of that, Brother Roger?
That's one of the forms of love.
Okay, that's one of the forms of love. Philo means like a lot. Be very fond of. And then we have the word aguria. Aguria.
Just like the marketplace?
That's like a marketplace. Love of merchandising. Merchandising. Sometimes when you go in a doctor's office, they are merchandisers instead of doctors, aren't they? Selling stuff. Love of money. The love of money. The love of merchandising. The love of things. Of which some... We're really giving the rich guys a rough time tonight, aren't we? We got after the preachers. We got after the... And this can be preachers here, too. This can be preachers right here. Very powerful men. Very rich. These preachers will always ask you for more than a tithe. The tithe is the Lord's. But they won't want this to tithe. They want more. That's one indicator. They want more than the tithe. A church ought to be able to survive on the tithe, shouldn't it? Or else they ought to make a budget where they can survive on the tithe. I remember Brother Madden know about making church budgets. It's in there. It's out there on the website. You know what? When I put him out on the website, I figured they'd throw him off the website, erase his, because they do that. They'll take him down. They'll just take him down off of there. He is so rough. I don't care how good you think you are and a Christian you are. When you get through listening to him, you crawl underneath the carpet and pull it over your head. Because you realize you weren't quite there yet.
He said, these churches that have budgets. Right out of hell.
He said, we don't need a big church house. You don't need anything fancy. He said, we're not Catholics, we're not Anglicans, we're not Presbyterians with all these fancy things. He said, we're Baptist, and Baptists can have church in a cave and have a good time. All we need is a roof over our head, and he said, when you even got air conditioners, then you have church fights. He said, somebody set his church house on fire down in Anaheim. They went in there and took the books in the offering place and set them on fire right there in the middle of the church and burned the place up. He had the meat out there in the parking lot in the tent. And boy, he said, we had good services. Now we got this great big church house with a vaulted ceiling and everything, and I preached in that thing. And he said, we have church fights every week almost about where they're going to set their air conditioner, 73 or 71. Women want 73, men want 71. And he says, according to who all's there, they'll look around for more women than men, huh? Well, let's vote again tonight about that. That's a congregation, you know, they're democratic rules, so they all make a motion. Every Wednesday night, you know, first Wednesday night every month is a business meeting, you know, in these old-time Baptist churches. And so if the women think they got the men outnumbered, let's vote on when they keep the thermostats. This one. Going to be 73. Well, I preached in boxcars. Just about anything, everything you can think of. Love of money which some of they are lusting after, and they wandered away. They wandered away. Actually, it says they were led astray. They were led out of the pathway. The word planet comes from that word. What does a planet do? Patty, you know what a planet does?
A planet?
A planet. What does a planet do? It goes in an orbit, doesn't it? It has its pathway. Okay, now you're no longer in the pathway. You're drug out of the way. And a lot of times before people really knew what was going on, they thought falling stars were planets that got out of the pathway. Mohammed was worse than that. When he saw a falling star, that was the angels throwing rockets, missiles, at the jinns and the devils. He didn't even have the devil straightened out, or the jinns or the spirits. He was really mixed up on all of that stuff. He had the devil as a jinn one time, and many devils. There's one devil. There's one Satan, isn't there? There aren't many Satans. There's just one. That's all we need. We can't handle more than one, can we? He had a bunch of them. To lead astray. Those falling stars aren't planets going out of orbit. They aren't angels throwing rockets and missiles at the jinns and the Satans. They wandered away. They were led astray from the faith. The faith. Now, I want you to understand one thing. That originally there was only one faith, one Lord and one baptism. Isn't that what is said? One faith, one Lord, one baptism. And from that one faith, one Lord, and one baptism, we got 100 denominations of Christendom, don't we? 100 denominations of Christendom. You said something the other night that's haunted me ever since, young lady. Huh?
What was that?
Well, you probably didn't even realize it. It just made my mind go. Have I ever said something that just made your head go? Well, my students make my head go sometimes. People will die for what they believe, whether it's right or wrong, don't they? Don't they? Mm-hmm. Now, I think there's a very special thing for a martyr's crown. A martyr's crown, okay? And over there in the Middle East and Africa and all those nations over there, there are so-called Christians being killed every day and beheaded by ISIS and Islam. Islam is a dangerous, violent religion, period. That's the way it is. That's it. There is no moderate Islam. There is no such thing. They're only moderate until they have the upper hand. And that's what the Quran says. Be moderate until you have the upper hand, and then kill and subdue and put terror in their hearts. You know that there's those people over there are being killed. Some of them are Jehovah's Witnesses. Do you think they get to go to heaven when they die? No. Why? They don't have the right God. How about a straight line Catholic? If you believe what Catholicism, do you get to go to heaven? No. But do they die for it? Yes. That's pitiful, isn't it? Led astray. There was only one faith, one Lord, one baptism. Just think about that. You see all these people over there. And sometimes they're being persecuted there, their heads being cut off, and they go right straight to hell. Because they have been led astray by such wrong teaching in the world. Wrong teaching. I can take you, and I'm a historian. I used to teach church history and everything. And I taught the doctrines of the Bible here in this church. We talk about baptism, we talk about the Lord's Supper and the church and all this stuff. I have church history books with the history of the Southern Baptists in California. About 70 years ago, they had a convention, and some of their churches were going astray. And they said, if you want to get paid, you quit accepting alien immersion, because that's a statement of our faith. We don't accept anybody's immersion. You are baptized when you come here. That's what we call the word Anabaptist came from. You baptize them again. You come here, you're baptized. And don't practice open communion or you won't have a paycheck if you're on salary. Now it's almost common. Where did it come from? Protestantism. Didn't come from the Lord. Didn't come from his churches, his churches practice. Some people have been led astray from the faith. Of themselves, they pierced through pains many. They stabbed themselves all over. Back in a mosque in the East Coast someplace back there, a Christian was very brave, went into that mosque and told them that even though Muhammad taught that the earth was flat, the earth was not flat. Haven't you seen pictures of the earth from outer space? And I think they stabbed him 37 times or something like that. Killed him. You don't defy Muhammad, nor the Quran. The earth is flat, according to Muhammad, and it will blow away, so God put mountains to hold it down. And he holds the sky up with invisible pillars, by his hands. And the sky is solid, just like the earth. It's like a ceiling. You don't have rafters and stuff up there, the ceiling fall on your head. That's the way the sky was. Now these people are giving their lives every day for that, aren't they? They're blowing themselves up. And a lot of people say they're cowards. They're not cowards. They're dying for their false religion. Where are they going instantly? Straight to hell. That's it. You got to believe the right thing. Is it real important for you to know the right thing? Real important to know it. You can die for your religion, but what is it good? I've had nightmares about this ever since, girl. I've been thinking about all these people all over the world dying right now, and some of them going straight to hell because they didn't know the truth, yet they thought they did. What is the truth about being saved? Jesus Christ is God the Son that came down to earth to redeem us, didn't he? He, God. The word Jehovah means he who shall become. John 1:14 says, Kahalogos Sarsaganatol. And the word, the Jehovah flesh he became and dwelt among us, and we saw the glory of the God. And it says there that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. He died on the cross. He was buried in the grave. He died on the cross. Muhammad said Jesus didn't die on the cross. And Jesus wasn't God's Son. That's a shirk in Islam. What a shirk is in Islam is blasphemy in Christianity. That's blasphemy, people. The whole God of heaven from eternity past was going to redeem the world one way. Not by your efforts, not by anything that you can do, but by his own efforts he will redeem the world back to himself. That he died on the cross, that he was raised from the dead. And if you believe in your heart these things, if you ask him to save your soul and forgive your sins and repent of your sins, you get to go to heaven. That's it. The price has been paid. If you don't do that, I don't care if you get your head chopped off for what you believe, or if you blow yourself up with a bomb. It's not going to do you any good. You get to go to the wrong place instantly. That's all. Instantly. Truth does matter. Truth matters.